The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Wendy, J. Will, good to see you guys. Stephen A. is off. A lot of voices joining us. Mel Kiper Jr. will be here. Dominic Foxworth, Rob Ninkovich, Mike Tannenbaum, all stopping by. We're going to have a lot of fun. But we are starting in the association, gentlemen. Mm. Are we ready? And I'm glad to have you both in studio.
Thank you.
So let's go. The Lakers without LeBron James, who's hampered with an ankle injury, and Anthony Davis, who likely will return this weekend. It was all Brody as L.A. traveled to Dallas to face Luka in the Mavs and took an 18-point loss. This was the Lakers' third straight loss, and they fell out of playing contention. Tensions boiled. Russell Westbrook getting into this exchange with Brad Turner, veteran Lakers beat for the LA Times.
Now you guys are actually the 11th seed, so you're out of the playing game. What changes going forward?
Nothing, man. Nothing.
And why is that?
Because it doesn't. What does it change? We still got games to play. Other teams still got games to play. We still got to play teams that's above us in the play-in. Don't really change much.
Thank you, Russ.
What do you think should change?
Winning. Be dumping.
Okay, that's obvious. What do you think should change?
Winning. Winning games, playing hard. Mm-hmm. You ask a question, I give you an answer.
That's fine. You got to answer the winning?
Why?
Do you have to answer the winning?
I'm not out there playing. Maybe I think I'm... You give me the answer, but you think
exactly.
So, well,
I don't have to answer.
You
know, exactly.
If so, you don't have it, you out there. I
so
can't have it.
You asked me to have an answer. You don't have it either.
Well, but I don't play, Russell. If you, I want to get the information from you, so that
I'm only one person, champ.
Right.
It's a team game. Right. So I don't have an answer.
Okay.
I may have it.
I don't have it.
So good.
But I'm asking the pros who know the game, play the game.
Yeah, yeah.
What you guys, what you think you can do to make it your part, yeah. Their part, everybody's
for
part.
Sure.
That's what I'm asking.
No, I really, man. Okay. I respect that.
Okay.
You got that? Y'all got that?
No.
You got it?
No, respect. We can
good.
Good.
It's good. It's good.
We good.
Y'all got that? All right, cool. Y'all got it. Make sure I record that.
The Lakers now have the same record as the Spurs, hold the conference tiebreaker, and could bump LA out of their play-in. It's the first time since October that the Lakers are out of playoff contention. Let me just say this. I've never met Brad Turner. I don't know if either of you have. But I feel like he handled that absolutely
well. Let me tell you two things about
perfectly.
Brad Turner real quick. One, when I first started going to Laker games 20 years ago, Denzel Washington, during timeouts, would come up out of his courtside seat to talk to Brad about the game.
Yep.
Two, in the offseason, Brad Turner lives in Paris. That's all you need to know.
Sounds like my
about
kind
how
of guy.
About how he handles his business.
Exactly.
Yeah, it sounds like my kind of guy. I'll start with you here. How does Westbrook look after the loss, Jay?
So here's how I want to portray the picture of Russell Westbrook, because I've been on this show multiple times, and I said one of the things that happens in L.A., mm-hmm. when you lose to this degree, they find alternative storylines to start pushing. And I said that the Russell Westbrook media reality show was going to begin. And that's what has been happening, right? Each and every day, you've been seeing Russell Westbrook at post-pressers, and I'm not condoning his action. He's getting frustrated, but it leads to all this type of stuff. It's like a shiny object that distracts you away from the problems that are actually existing on the court. Now, I recognize that a lot of that is self-inflicted, right? I wish that Russell had more awareness where he answered the question properly the first time. There was no need to bark back at him and say, what do you think? And then suck your teeth and go on for that. But that's Russell, right? But I feel like I know who Russell Westbrook is. Russell Westbrook has told me this is who he is his entire career. And it just feels like it distracts us away from the fact that this roster is poorly constructed. Now, I know LeBron James and Russell Westbrook have a lot of dealing with that. It distracts me from the fact that, hey, they don't have shooters. If Russell Westbrook is a poor man's version of LeBron James, and I know that's poor man usually knocks somebody, but we're talking about one of the greatest players to ever play the game, you have to surround him with personnel that actually is compatible to how these guys both play. So I hate that this happens, because this makes everybody focus on this, and I refuse to let this be Russell Westbrook's legacy. The guy averaged a triple-double for three consecutive seasons. He will go down as a Hall of Famer. And this, to me, as a former athlete, proves it's hard to win championships, man. It's hard for everything to come together and click at the right time with the right pieces and the right coach to get these things done. So I refuse to be on this guy on the side that just comes out and annihilates Russell Westbrook today, because I think it's gotten to the point of it's overboard now.
I actually was happy Russell admitted that he doesn't have the answer. Because, and I actually think for the last month, Westbrook's played his best basketball of the year for the Lakers. The last 15 games, Molly, he's averaging more points, his shooting is up, his turnovers are down. It's still not what the Lakers wanted, but it's better. He's actually played better. And I feel like this last month, Russ has actually kind of more come to terms with his situation. It's not going to help the Lakers this season. It's not going to help them last night. I mean, it's already over. But one of the things that was frustrating me about Russell, and one of the reasons why I don't think he was a sympathetic figure for a lot of this year, is because he was so hard-headed about everything. He's out there still playing the same way he was playing when everything was failing. So the fact, I mean, if you look at his numbers from November and December, I mean, he was averaging 5 turnovers a game. You look at his the way he's played the last month, it's like, it's livable. And so I actually think if Russ had acted and handled his business this way back in October, November, we might be having a different conversation right now.
Two questions for both of you. How do you see him as a sympathetic figure now?
And that's the thing, like, he was really upset.
Especially after that exchange.
It's mostly more from where he was, Molly, because, you know, the West Brick thing.
Yeah.
He was frustrated because even though he was having this miserable season, the fans were all over him. And the reason the fans were all over him is because he wanted to be in L.A., and they came and he wouldn't stop shooting. Mm-hmm. He refused to stop shooting. He refused to stop trying to bank in those shots from 18 feet. And he got to the point where the only way he could really get sympathy is to mention his wife and son, because they are sympathetic figures. But he just wasn't a sympathetic figure this year because of the way he handled his business, the way he was defiant. And that's not a surprise. That's how he's been his whole career. Mm-hmm. But I actually kind of saw him as being a little bit vulnerable, at least by the Russ standard last night.
I don't feel sorry for Russ, because when you use the word refuse, that is still who Russell Westbrook is to me. And I sometimes feel like it's my job on this platform to try to give people insight into some of these special traits of Russell Westbrook that sometimes I feel like we forget, because this is part of a car accident that we like to pour more gasoline on. Because when we see fire, more gasoline, more gasoline. Once again, some of this is self-inflicted by Russ himself with the way he handles media. I am not making excuses for that. But that same relentless refusal to quit, refusal to stop shooting, you know how many people in life refuse to do things because they're told they can't do it? Or it's a little bit too hard. I'm not going to be who I am. Or I'm not going to continue to fight for it. At least I love that about him. At least he wears his emotions on his sleeve. Like, we used to have things against athletes before where, well, I wish athletes would just tell us how they feel.
He's talking about it becoming a sympathetic figure. Because you're basically showing
sympathy. He's saying he's being authentic, and he is who he is, and he's staying consistent regardless of the media reaction. But let me ask you this, because you brought up his legacy, and what I'm curious of, what was his legacy prior to coming to the Lakers, and what do you think it's becoming now? Because you said, I'm not buying into this legacy. What is that?
Well, I'm not buying into how people are trying to create a legacy that he's a loser. Like, that's the direction it feels like it's going. Russell was 1-1. I mean, the guy averaged a triple-double for 3 consecutive seasons. And just look at the numbers. At the end of the day, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Does that equate into winning a championship? Did it equate into winning a championship for Charles Barkley? Do I think less of Charles Barkley because he didn't win a championship? I know the common everyday person will say, well, you never won anything, but Charles Barkley is still a Hall of Famer. And I think that we sometimes lose sight of how special of a player Russell is. Does it come with some of his flaws? Sure it does. But it still doesn't take away from how special he is on the court.
Yeah, Charles Barkley, also my favorite person on TV. Let me ask you this, Wendy. We'll move it forward and go on the court. What is the likelihood that the Lakers now miss the play-in?
It's getting very likely, actually, because I don't think LeBron is going to play tomorrow in Utah. AD likely not play tomorrow in Utah. Maybe they come back this weekend. Utah just had a miserable loss to the Clippers last night. I expect Utah to try to easily win this game.
Yeah.
So that means that they're probably going to be even now 2, because they're tied, but they're really a game back because they're a tiebreaker. That means they're probably going to be 2 back. And San Antonio, the next two games, they play Memphis tonight, but the two games over the weekend, they play the Blazers at home. They beat the Blazers in Portland by 30 last week. I mean, the Blazers are not a good team, or the Spurs are not a good team either. Otherwise, they wouldn't have the same record as the Lakers. But by the end of the weekend, by the time AD comes back maybe on Sunday, Lakers could be down three, Molly, mm-hmm. with the hardest schedule left. And now, I respect AD and LeBron, and like maybe they put the hammer down, and maybe they finish. But like at this point, even saying they finished 500 would be, I mean, like a 500 in the remaining games. Like right now, they're trying to avoid a 50-loss season. 50 losses. I mean, it's insane that they're even in position to be in the play-in. They should be thanking the breaks that they're lucky to be in the play-in. I mean, there hasn't even been a team in the Western Conference make the playoffs with an under 500 record since 1997. Yeah. Normally, they would have been on vacation in Cancun for a month already.
Yeah, I would have bet you a vacation in Cancun that we were going to see the Lakers and the Nets in this year's finals. Very wrong on that.
I said a month ago that I didn't think they were going to make the play-in tournament. Mm-hmm. And it seems like there is this false reality of people living in this space that are saying, whoa, when they get it all together. I'm like, if you watch this team play consistently, there is nothing in my basketball mind that makes me think they're going to actually figure it out and they're all going to come together. You're telling me now after AD missing 4 months of playing, he's going to come back and be the savior? Probably. You're telling me now LeBron James with a sore left knee and a twisted left ankle that he's going to come back and drop 50-plus? You're telling me all of a sudden Russ is going to figure it out? You're telling me all of a sudden Frank Vogel defensively, this team is average. They went from being one of the top defensive teams a year ago to being average. They're going to figure it out scheme-wise? No, they're not. The best thing to do, I'm telling you, and I know people are going to say, well, LeBron, you made this mess. You got to fight for it. Business decision, Green. Wendy. I almost called you Greeny.
Praise the Lord. We saw
Wendy,
you on Get Up.
I just saw Greeny. We were just
good.
With Greeny 5 minutes ago. Shut it down. Like, I start thinking about what's in my best interest going into year 20 of my NBA career, going into year 38. I know he's not going to shut it down, but I don't want to increase the probability of LeBron James getting hurt. I don't want to see what happened to another great Laker player in Kobe Bryant who was trying to play off an injury and then injured himself more. Not when you're fighting for a 10 spot.
Yeah, I was just going to say, but when you have AD potentially coming back, and if you LeBron back healthy, you get it all together, and you never know injuries. I'm not wishing injury ever on anyone, but you're not saying that they could get a series when we're talking about that big three. You never know. That's
Molly,
why I feel like
is LeBron going to come back healthy?
Out.
Is he going to come back healthy? You're telling me
when has he ever really been healthy in the playoffs?
Well, that's
right?
My thing.
That's
now he has a rolled ankle. Is AD going to come back healthy? You're telling me AD is going to come back healthy?
I mean, if you want to get LeBron into a bad mood as fast as possible, bring up minutes. He just doesn't want to hear it. He's like, you don't know what minutes do to my body. I know what minutes do to my body. I gave up talking about minutes to LeBron 5 years ago because he gave us all a lecture about how we don't know. But I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that he doesn't listen to that. That doesn't mean anything to him. I mean, just last week, you know, he played the back-to-back in Washington and Cleveland. And Frank Vogel was saying, this is a guy who should be the example for the rest of the league because he always plays. He always plays. And the thing was, you know, 3 years ago, his first year in L.A., he did shut it down the stretch. He had that groin injury. Mm-hmm. But the difference was they had their draft pick. Ended up being really smart. They tanked at the end. They ended up... You know, got really lucky. They ended up getting the fourth pick, and it was the key moment that got them to the title the next year because they traded it as a central piece for Anthony Davis. They don't have their pick. So, like, if you're looking at LeBron and AD for competitive people, I think, Molly, I think you're right. Yeah. I think what Molly is saying is going to win the day.
And I'll just
I believe that, for sure.
I'll just wrap by saying this really quick. Yesterday, I brought up the LeBron thing, and I said self-serving, maybe not the best choice of words in terms of he just passed Karl Malone, keep playing, wanting the minutes, et cetera. And J.J. Redick kind of said, you can't have it both ways. You can't call out guys for load management and then be mad at LeBron for wanting to play. And that was a really good point. I had no response on that because it's true. And we do that, and we can't have it both ways. We're going to keep it going here, guys. Giannis with the block for the win. The Bucks beating the Sixers in Philly, 118-116. Antetokounmpo getting the better of Joel Embiid, his competition not just in the East, but for MVP. On Tuesday, Jokic overtook Embiid as the odds-on favorite for MVP. There was no change in odds for Giannis, but the two-time MVP remains in the race for third. I'll start with you, Wendy. Who's your MVP frontrunner?
I voted for Joel Embiid in our straw poll, and the reason those odds changed is because of our straw poll. Tim Bontemps does this poll. It's one of the coolest things we do. He talks to the actual voters, not here in New York, not in Los Angeles, in all 30 markets overseas, which is the pool that the actual voters come from. The voters believe, and you can disagree with them, you can present your own case, but as of today, the voters believe that Nikola Jokic is the MVP. And the first place votes were 62 to 29. Last time we did this poll, last time Tim did this poll, which was about maybe 6 weeks ago, Embiid was ahead. So this last month of Jokic, where he's averaged 30 points on 61% shooting and then carried the Nuggets to a bunch of wins, has apparently impressed the voters. It didn't change my vote. And you know, this always happens. You vote for Embiid, people say, oh, you don't like Jokic. I mean, I voted for Jokic for MVP last year. I just can't find a reason to demote Embiid the way he's playing. He had another brilliant game last night. He had a brilliant game Sunday in Phoenix against the one of the best defenses in the league. But I'm telling you, I can sit here and defend Embiid. You can give me your case for Giannis. Giannis is in distant third.
Understood.
The voters are not, and then, you know, the vote isn't due today. The vote's due in 2 weeks. It's not a guarantee. But Vegas knows how important that straw poll is. If you didn't have your vote, if you didn't have your bet in on Jokic before that straw poll came out, you got bad price today.
Wendy, I don't have Giannis winning my MVP. I have Jokic winning my MVP. And I thought that this year has been really interesting. I actually got in an argument with Stephen A. about this because I feel like he is the most underappreciated superstar we have in the NBA. It feels like people always try to knock him because it doesn't look sexy, right? Or it doesn't have the same pizzazz that Joel Embiid have. This guy has 19 triple-doubles for the season. That's more than 19 NBA teams, Molly, combined. Let me say that again. That's more than 19 NBA teams combined. You said averaging 30 points on 61% shooting on this stretch, right? Leads the league in PER. And let me give you an analogy that puts it in perspective for everybody. So we're talking about AD not being available. We're talking about Russ being a shell of himself. LeBron having to average 50 to a degree to keep his team in contention to be in the play-in tournament. This guy's been playing without Jamal Murray. He's been playing without Michael Porter Jr. the whole season. And I'll tell you, they're in sixth right now in the West. They could end up in fourth or fifth in the West. So you talk about overachieving. You talk about the job that Michael Malone is doing. I don't hear a lot of people talk about his name being in conversation for Coach of the Year. Like, it just feels like everything about Denver doesn't get the respect nationally that is truly
I will
deserved.
Say this, though. He is the MVP. He won the MVP, and he's leading the kid. I mean, you know, can you be underrated if you're about to win your second straight MVP?
But, I mean, you've been talking about Jokic, but I feel like on national platform shows, he's not the most highly touted topic.
We're always talking about New York, L.A., all of it. But I want to know this. Can Giannis catch him?
Well, see, here's my thing. I don't know if Giannis can catch Jokic, but I think Giannis can make a major case down the stretch. The only reason I say that, Wendy, is because you think about their next several games. He's a huge game tomorrow night. Platform matters. Your stage matters. So, hey, Kevin Durant and company, that's a big-time matchup that the national media pays attention to. You're coming to Brooklyn. Colossal matchup. How do you perform in that game? You're playing against Boston, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. How do you perform in that game? You're playing against Dallas, Luka Doncic. How do you perform in that game? You're playing against the Clippers, who have Paul George back right now. They're in a prime position. They're one of the best coach teams in the NBA with Ty Lue. And then you follow off, you're playing against Cleveland, who is still in a great position in the Eastern Conference. So those nationally praised games, that's a platform I think Giannis can create a lot of leverage for himself.
Final word here.
I would just say that it's not a done deal. If you really look at the numbers and you listen to what Tim says about him, because he's done this for years now. Last year, he took a poll at this same time, saw Jokic ahead where he was at, and said he can't catch him. He declared Jokic was going to win at this point last year, and he was right. He is not declaring Jokic a shoo-in now because of what you said. Giannis could make a move. Maybe they get the number one seed in the East. Maybe Denver doesn't go and get the four or five. Maybe they go backwards into the play-in.
True as well.
So it's still not firmed up. But right now, it is Embiid or Jokic, and Jokic has the lead, and it's not really that close.
Mm. All right. Two things for you guys. One, I'm excited to talk about the Nets, so sit tight because I'm going to get into NFL. And I don't have social media on my phone, but I'm told we have a tweet from Stephen A. I'm nervous. Okay. Okay, at Real Jay Williams and Windhorse, yes, I'm on vacation.
No, you're not.
I just want everyone to know it's always an undisclosed tropical vacation. I've been working for 6 years. I don't even know where the man goes. But I'm watching you on First Take, especially you, Jay. You know what comes with sitting in the
you're
seat.
Right, Stephen A. You're right. I'm in your seat today.
By the way, to my brother Brad Turner, way to handle your business. I'm with him on that. Brad Turner, pros pro. And, oh, and he complimented my outfit. That was nice. That was nice. I appreciate that. This
you,
is
Stephen.
New.
I'm with you. You're right.
This is new, Stephen A. I'm trying. Still best dressed on the show. Not best debater. All right, you guys sit tight. Stephen A., go relax. Go to the beach. Turn off your phone.
You can't relax.
Coming up here, we're talking playoffs. NFL owners have approved an overtime rule change for the postseason. The owners approving a modified proposal that will guarantee each team a possession, but only in the postseason. The rule for regular season games, which allows the team with the first possession to win if it scores a TD, will remain unchanged. Here's the commissioner from Florida.
We always listen to the fans. That's an important thing. You know, you hear that on both sides, and I understand that. We're always looking to improve. And I think what really drove the decision was the database, ultimately, and looking at the facts and what's happened. Where we saw that most having an influence, I think it was 12 games in the postseason have been in overtime, seven of which, I believe, were won on the first possession. That when you see that, that's the type of thing that I think our coaches and everyone looked at. This is an issue in the postseason we should deal with.
There they are. Look at this panel. This is what I'm talking about. Suited and booted. Dominique Foxworth, Mike Tannenbaum, Rob Ninkovich. Good morning to all of you. Rob, I just wish that you had your dog with you. I really enjoy your live shots from home. I mean, usually GetUp gets all the good stuff, but I love all of it. I'm going to start with you here, Mike T. Are you a fan of the NFL OT rule change?
Well, I think it's improved, Molly, but there's still a fundamental flaw to me, which is I think there's a great disservice for the team that goes first. So let's say Team A gets the ball and it's 4th and 8 at their own 25. They're going to punt the ball, obviously. However, if they score a touchdown when Team number 2 gets the ball and it's the same 4th and 8 from their own 25, they're going to go for it, obviously, to keep the game alive. So we're always talking about fairness and making an equal playing field. The way the rule is currently constructed, there'll now be a premium to go second, and it's going to give the team that goes second a big advantage, and in fact, maybe a whole extra down than the first team that has it.
So I feel like, Mike, you've made my point. I expected to actually have to debate, but like the point is, it's not going to be perfect. They've changed the rule to try to satiate people like you who are complaining about 12 games in 12 seasons. Like, it's not a big sample size. It's not impacting who the champion is on most occasions. And frankly, like, we're reacting to quite possibly the best game in football history that we had last year. And it's not recency bias anymore. It's no longer hyperbole. We're far enough away to look at that Bills-Chiefs game and understand it was incredible. And how, in the offseason from that, we come back and say, hey, that wasn't good enough. Let's fix it. And then they try to fix it, and you come up with another problem with the fix. Like, we have to accept that overtime is not going to be perfect. It's going to be some version of football, which is fine. If you want it to be completely fair, then go to the college rule or go to a field goal kickoff, which my man Spencer Hall has been advocating for. Like, if you want it to be completely even, then have shootouts like you do in soccer. Let's just accept that it's not going to be fair. Stick with the old rules. Play some defense. If you can't stop them, maybe you need to get a weighted coin so you can win the coin toss. Like, the idea that we're going to chase some perfect overtime rule, it's not going to happen because, as Mike just demonstrated, no matter what you do, there's going to be a problem with it. And Rob agrees with me. I can see it in your face, right?
Well, listen, I like the fact that they changed the rule. I like that they kept the regular season games the way that they are, but they changed the rule in the playoffs, obviously because of last year in the Buffalo Bills, and they should have had another opportunity, yada, 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 yada. But at the end of the day, It comes down to money, too. It comes down to making sure that all these owners are happy. I guarantee because of that game, there's some owner like, we should have had another chance because if we would have made it to the Super Bowl, guess what? I'm richer. So at the end of the day, they want to make sure the fans are happy. They want to make sure the owners are happy. So let's try and adjust these rules to where everyone has a fair opportunity to score points. But at the end of the day, like Mike T said, the defense is always going to be trying to play with one hand tied behind their back. They took away that you can't touch within 5 yards. They increased the defensive holdings, the PIs. You know, you can a running back can run over a defender, but you can't put your head in it. I get it. But at the end of the day, it's all about the offense, about scoring points and keeping those seats happy.
Let me ask you guys
this. There is something very fundamental here, guys.
Go ahead, Mike T. You finish, and then I'll follow up.
Yeah. Yeah, Molly, I was just going to put a ribbon on it. Just, there is something very fundamental here, which was going back to that epic game that Dominique alluded to, which is if Buffalo had defended for 13 seconds, none of this would have happened. I mean, that is the context of what we're talking about. It was 13 seconds, and Patrick Mahomes still scored.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing I was just going to say, guys, and I was watching, I think it was on, you know, NFL Live and then on Get Up, Marcus Spears was livid about this. And he was livid about it from the front that it diminishes the value of defense, the importance of defense once again. And I wanted to get your take on that, Rob.
Well, I still think the other team's defense. So say you're the first team that possesses the ball. You go down and you score. Well, then now it's up to us as the defense. All right, we scored offensively because my last game I played in against the Falcons, our offense got the ball. We won the toss. We got the ball. We drove it down. We scored. We won the game. Okay, yay. I was standing there really happy. But now we would have had to look at each other like, yo, we got to go and do this. We got to make a stop. And what Mike T was saying, yes, the rules are going to be different for that second team possessing the ball because first down, you're going to have two first downs or you're going to have two second downs. Fourth down plays like third down. So the team that possesses the ball second almost has the advantage. So if you win the toss in the playoffs, you might say, okay, give them the football, see what they do with it. If we score, we win. So, again, this is kind of changing philosophies, changing how you would play the game. It's going to be interesting to see how people move forward with this.
It seems like the second team is going to have an advantage. Like, no one's going to have an advantage. But I think I would respond to anyone who's saying that we need to change the overtime rule the same way I respond to my children when they talk about fairness. It's not fair is what they say. Well, life's not fair. Like, we're not ever going to make this a completely fair thing. And like I mentioned before, if you wanted to be completely fair, then make it a kickoff or the college rules. Like, those, that seems fair to me. It may be a perversion of what football actually is, but it's actually closer to fairness. It's always going to be a different circumstance for the team that goes afterwards. And this, to me, reminds me of the offensive pass interference. Remember that Saints-Rams playoff game when we had an overreaction to an admittedly terrible call. Then we instituted this review of offensive pass interference, and it was a scourge on the following season. Then they retracted it. And that was actually a reaction to a bad playoff result. This is a reaction to a good playoff result. So I always appreciate that the NFL is one of the leagues that is willing to change. And it's kind of quick to test out new things. But this time, we had the greatest game we've ever seen. We all had a cigarette after we watched that game together as a country. What? It was fun. It was outstanding.
I didn't even get that reference of the cigarette.
It's because it's like a, never mind. You're not getting me fired today, Molly. Somebody will tell you
about it. I don't get it. I've heard cigar. It's over my head. So I'm just letting you know.
Someone will tell you
one
during the commercial break. But the point is, why would we have to change something when we had such a great experience? We loved it. And our response is, it wasn't good enough? Like, I feel like the reaction is ridiculous. Let's just go back to the old playoff or the old overtime rules. Or, I mean, in the postseason, we can't have ties. But it's not crazy to have regular season ties. More football is not always a good thing, I think, is the fundamental basis for my argument. It's not always better to have more.
Let me ask you this, Mike. If both teams score a touchdown, could you see the next possession going for two as a strategy here with the rule change?
Yeah, that's interesting, Molly. That was sort of what Mike Vrabel's suggestion was, which was going back to the initial rule, which is if you score and then got a two-point play, the game was over. So it's a little bit of what Dominique's alluding to with the college game, which is, you know, I think it's now in the third overtime. You have to go for two. So I think that's probably coming because you're going to get into player health and safety issues too, where you want the game to end, and by forcing teams to go for two, it does accelerate the ending.
All right, we'll leave it there. All you guys are back. Thank you for that. So appreciate it. And I'm going to Google that reference. I don't know if I should, Dominique. privately. All right, guys.
On your work computer, though.
Thank you so much. It's my work computer. I'll talk to all you three in just a bit. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Brightside breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Jay, according to Woj, Celtics center Robert Williams is expected to return in 4 to 6 weeks after undergoing surgery on his left knee. Williams could be back in the lineup as soon as the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Good news for the Seas?
Great news for them. One of the reasons why they're one of the best defensive teams in the NBA is due to Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown being too pressure on the perimeter, because you have a guy as the landlord behind you and a guy like Robert Williams who can block shots but also alter so many shots throughout the course of a game.
Absolutely. We'll keep it going here, guys, to the Nets, who beat the Pistons, who are 14th in the East by just 7 last night at home, thanks to Kevin Durant dropping 41. Brooklyn could certainly use some help on defense, paging Ben Simmons. Here's Steve Nash on their Achilles heel.
You know, it really comes down to how much edge we play with. You know, in Miami, we play with a lot of edge. Against Utah, the best offense in the league, play with a lot of edge. You know, I think when we play with edge, we're a much better team defensively. When we take our foot off the gas a little bit, you know, we're not good enough just to roll out there and shut people down.
J.J. Redick also has some concerns about Brooklyn, saying this yesterday right here on First Take. Take a listen.
I'm going to say this. I don't see the Nets, without Ben Simmons healthy, I don't see the Nets winning a playoff series.
With a full-time Kyrie and Kevin Durant, you know this squad very well. You know this area very well. I won't put you on blast. You don't have them winning a playoff series?
Kevin Durant is an all-world player. Kyrie Irving is an all-world player. Those guys can get buckets.
Yeah.
But there are real question marks about their defense.
I have so much respect for Kevin Durant as a player. I really can't articulate it more. When I watched him in Tokyo last year after exhausting himself coming off the Achilles and the way he played in Tokyo, my admiration for him, if he can go higher, it goes even higher. So it's very difficult for me to admit that and then also say that he can't do something. But I'm watching this game last night. Detroit is the number 28 offensive team in the league.
Yeah.
Jeremy Grant, who was their leading scorer, he's been out a lot, but he's their leading scorer, is out. And they gave up 123 points in Brooklyn. They just don't have good defensive fundamentals. They didn't have good defensive fundamentals in January. They don't have them in March. I don't think they're going to have them in April. And so, Molly, if this was another year,
yeah,
if this was 2015 or 16, back in those years where the Cavs with LeBron didn't even have to stretch before a game till the conference finals, and the East had some, you know, not so good teams, I would feel like, yeah, I could see this. But it's not just the Nets' defense that's worrisome. It's the quality of the opposition that they're going to have to beat. And so, I'm not necessarily on the same page as JJ. I think it's going to depend on the matchup.
Yeah.
But I just can't get behind believing that they can win three playoff series with defending in this manner.
See, Wendy, I don't have the Nets coming out of the East. I can potentially see if they can get to maybe the Eastern semis before it's over because of those defensive woes. But I'm not going to sit up here on national TV and say they're not going to win a playoff series. I'm not doing that. I'm not betting against the most lethal, the most skilled duo the game of basketball has ever seen. Let me just say that. The most skilled duo the game of basketball has ever seen. You're telling me you're going to bet against Kyrie and KD going off for 40 or 50? I think their offensive power can make up for the lack of their defensive abilities to a degree. Doesn't get you over the hump. I'm not betting against them to win a playoff series, though. I think that's erroneous. But I will say, to add to your point, such a different team this year. And it's the personnel for Sean Marks that is a question, right? Last year, we had Landry Shamet, we had Jared Allen, we had Joe Harris, who was healthy. Those are defensive guys. Joe Harris, one of the toughest defensive players there is in the league. He may not have the quickest feet laterally, but he has intention to guard you every possession. Jared Allen can erase a lot of mistakes as the backbone of your defense. Landry Shamet, long, guys like that, can be athletic. They can help add to the legs that have to actually carry for KD and Kyrie. But when you talk about, just Detroit, 119 to the Hornets, 132 to the Grizz, 123 to Portland.
Ugh.
To Portland, and then 113 to the Mavs. So I think what happens here, we end up not shining the light on the person that has to make this happen. And that's Steve Nash to me.
I thought you were going to say Ben Simmons.
Well, it's going to be Ben. Look, obviously
that's
you want to have Ben Simmons. That's why you traded for him, but obviously he's not available.
Yeah.
But one of the things I'm hearing around the league, Wendy, is that there are a lot of scouts, there are a lot of coaches that don't feel like Steve Nash is great at in-game adjustments. And for me, over the next month and a half, 2 months, I want to see what kind of junk he throws out there. We know your team isn't one of the best defensively, but you still have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And you know how normal people like me are going to look at it and say, you got KD and Kyrie. Like, there are no excuses.
Yeah.
I know you don't have Ben Simmons, but still, now it's time to show us where your coaching is, your second year full-time head coaching. You got the opportunity. Now it's time to show us what's in your bag.
He does have a great staff.
And I agree with you.
Steve Clifford is one of the best tactician coaches. Steve Clifford is a coaching advisor to Steve. I just don't know if you can build habits in April. I mean, I sound like an old man.
But whose job is that, to build habits?
It's the coach's job. I know. I sound like an old man. This is something I would roll my eyes at when I was in my 20s, because I would hear somebody say this and go, okay, just outshoot them. But I've watched the NBA for too long. I've watched these teams who in these situations where you got to get a stop or you got to get two stops out of three in the end of a playoff game. Because we know there's going to be games where Kyrie does score 47 and Durant does score 36 and they're going to win. I'm talking about when they're playing the Bucks or they're playing the Heat and it's 2-2 and the series is on the line and they can't get stops and they end up losing 136, 132. And then they got to do that again in the next series. And then again in the next series. I just don't know if they have enough great skill, but I don't know if they got enough.
How does that all fall on Steve Nash, though, when he just got Kyrie back? That was out of his control, so he hasn't had his guys, and now he doesn't have Ben Simmons.
Well, I never used absolutes. I didn't say it all falls on Steve Nash. I just said that I'm paying attention now to in-game adjustments on how you defend, what your schemes are like, and how you choose to defend if you go against a Philadelphia with Joel Embiid and James Harden. I don't worry about when the playoffs get here, players recognize that they can kick it into a different gear. Mm-hmm. And I know fans may not understand that, but you're playing 82 games. It's a lot of games. You know, and we're expecting KD to drop 40 every night. Kyrie's coming back now. I know he has fresh legs. But the level of intensity goes up. I do think that KD and Kyrie and the Nets can match that. But we know about it's the game within four-minute increments, right? The game within the games that coaches have to manage. And how they manage that will ultimately dictate, especially if you're undermanned, especially if you're not that great defensively, that's where coaching adds a huge advantage to the talent of KD and Kyrie.
Before we move on real quick, you hear him most skilled duo of all time? You buying that?
I had to pause when he said that. I paused too,
but I didn't want to interrupt the debate, but I'm like, what? Making note of that one.
When they did the Harden trade, he said this is, how did you say it? You said this is the most fearsome three.
Most fearsome trio the game.
And I kind of, you know, at that time I kind of went, I don't know about that, Jay. And then I watched him play and I was like, it's pretty fearsome. So when he says that, I wish I could, you know, Chris Russo this and pound the table and say, name them, but I'm not ready to fight.
Tell me a more skilled duo. I mean, if you want to give me the Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen argument, but Scottie still wasn't as lethal as KD and Kyrie.
There's almost been nobody I've ever seen as skilled as Kyrie Irving. So you start with that.
Who's the most skilled player in the game today? Would you say Kyrie?
With the ball.
All right. Who's the second most skilled player in the game today?
Kevin Durant's the best shooter I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it's
dribbler,
passer. Like I said, Molly, I wish I had a bazooka to go right back at him. I don't have it, so I guess he may have a point. I reserve the right.
If you marinate on it a little later, if you want to sit on it and just revisit it, I just want to pause. I like to think about things
in the middle of the NFL segment to come bursting on set.
Absolutely.
Stephen A., go ahead, tweet. I know you're on vacation. I'll wait, though. I'll wait for him, too.
I don't know where he would be on this one. We'll see. Okay. We'll see. We'll find out. All right, we'll keep it going, guys. The L.A. Clippers, we saw what Paul George still has, scoring 34 in a return from absence. 3 months he's been gone, a comeback versus the Utah Jazz. He hit 5 of 7 shots in the third when he erupted for 20 of his points to help the Clippers erase a 25-point deficit with 8:07 remaining in that frame. He made 6 of 9 three-pointers for the game. Here's PG with our Malika Andrews.
You guys have been the comeback kings with and without you on the floor this season. Now that you're back, now that you're healthy, and you're looking at the playoff picture, how do you see this season shaking out for you all?
We just got to get one of these spots. Finish this year off, like I said. You know, I challenged the guys to start shaping into a playoff team. We got to do that now opposed to getting to the play-in game, and now we're trying to pull it together and be a playoff team. It starts now. We got to start building and getting some chemistry going, some consistency going. And then from there, we can do, you know, just about anything. We've had a great playoff run last year. I think we're a better team this year. And so, you know, anything can happen. We just got to lock in one of these spots.
First of all, great to see PG back. Do you think that he and the Clippers could give the Suns or Grizzlies a series?
Hell no. No, I don't. I think Phoenix and Memphis are exponentially, and obviously I think Golden State could be in that conversation depending upon the health of Steph and Draymond in the back and how Clay coming off missing 2 years of playing a game of basketball. I still think they're a year away from being back to where they were. But I think Phoenix and Memphis are by far the two best teams in the Western Conference. And I love Paul George. Now, if you're telling me Paul George and Kawhi Leonard were coming back, I might have to take a second and pause, Molly. You know what I mean, Wendy?
Of course.
Those two players combined with Terrence Mann, Reggie Jackson, Zubac, the way they defend, Ty Lue as a coach. But I don't see Paul George being enough to get them over the hump with the way – have you seen Memphis defend? I know we talk a lot about what Memphis's record is without Ja, which is 18-2. But with Ja Morant healthy, they are dogs. Have you the basketball gods may have gifted Chris Paul, the point guard, the best gift of all time. Even better odds than what they were last year with win a championship this year. So I watch both those teams. They are by far the best teams in Western Conference. Clippers are good. They're fine. I could see them maybe get to the Western Conference semis, but I don't see them going above that.
First off, extremely impressive performance from Paul George to not play for 40 games.
Yeah.
Come back and score 34. And by the way, just rip open a wound on the Jazz last night. The Jazz
did it last year, right?
Yeah,
game
they,
six.
25. The Jazz were up 25 in this game. Paul George, he led the Clippers back. So the Clippers have not been playing well. They actually just came off their worst 10-game stretch of the season. That getting Paul back was vital for them. They're not playing their best basketball right now. I know that the playoffs aren't today, but I can't look at the way they're playing and say, oh, yeah, I see a team that shows indications that they're taking off. Now, they win their next six games, you know, and Ja can't come back. These are pieces of information I don't have. Well, then I might have a different opinion on this, but I just don't see. And, you know, if it's the eighth seed, forget about Phoenix. The Phoenix is playing some of the most technically perfect basketball I've ever seen. What Chris Paul is doing, like, he's not going to win the MVP, but I'm really considering giving him an honorary spot on my ballot just because I've never seen a guy operate a team and lead a team, almost never seen a guy like that this year. So I don't think anybody's taken – I don't think this team's taken four. Even if Kawhi came back and played just because he has no rhythm.
Hasn't played.
But that's why Kawhi wouldn't come back, because he knows that they can't beat
them. I wonder when Kawhi is going to come back.
Well, they still won't rule him out. If they can end up winning that play-in game, which right now would be against Minnesota, which I don't love.
Game. That's a tough game.
And they get the 7th seed, and Ja is not playing, I guess I give them a chance to take a couple of games. But how can I say that?
Their record without Ja is so impressive. 18-2, it's unreal. By the way, Donovan Mitchell, real frustrated yesterday. You could see that, too. I know we showed the Paul George sound, but him just frustrated with that squad altogether.
I also want to say, you know, I find it, when players start saying 6 games left in the regular season, you know, we have to find our rhythm, it's time for us to kick it into playoff gear. I'm like, man, it's past the time.
Yeah. Habits.
Like, it's past the time. Exactly. Your habits translate to the playoffs, and your habits haven't been that great, and you're trying to, you know, insert yourself back into the lineup. And I get what offensive boost that can make, but I don't think that's nowhere close enough to get over the hump of a fully healthy Memphis and Phoenix team. Mm-hmm. We should not even be discussing that. I think it's a disservice to how good Memphis and Phoenix actually are.
They're steaming mad. Des Bain wants to have something to say.
Up against it. We'll be back. Most skilled duo. Think about it.